Hi, Patrick Cox here in Boston with another World in Words. This week, a big fight over words. How many does the English language have? One man with a proprietary algorithm says we've just passed the 1 million mark. Linguists are unimpressed.
The biggest load of chicken droppings I've heard in a long time, Jeremy, I have to say.
Also, my favourite street language is Singlish. Soon, it'll be yours too.
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
My name is Matthew Fitt, I'm from Dundee, I'm a writer, but I didn't bide in Dundee anymore, I bide in a toon cad bigger than the south of Scotland.
The World is co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. The Big Show is broadcast on more than 260 public radio stations all across the United States. Listen online at theworld.org. That's also where you can find all of our podcasts and many other things. We've got a very nice lineup today. First, a claim and some furious counterclaims that English has passed the million word mark. Then the highly inventive street language known as Singlish. Finally, as some Chinese Uyghurs are sprung from Guantanamo. Well, maybe I should just say released. They didn't escape. We check out the Uyghur language. So first, what we Brits call a row. In other words, a hotly debated argument. And this row is a language row. You may have seen some stories this week about the millionth word being added to the English language. This was a declaration by an Austin, Texas organization called the Global Language Monitor. Those of us who work in language journalism have known about this for quite a while now because the Global Language Monitor reminds us about this in emails and various other missives. In any case, the Global Language Monitor claimed to be able to call or estimate when English turned 1 million, as it were. The monitor's president, Paul Payak, called this the Million Word March. And on the morning that he predicted that we'd hit a million, in fact, just 2 hours before that very moment, well, the BBC had Payak engage in a bit of a debate with someone who didn't think much of his claim. That was Benjamin Zimmer, a consultant for the Oxford English Dictionary and a former editor of American Dictionaries at the Oxford University Press. First, here is Paul Payak explaining the methodology of the Global Language Monitor.
What we did is 5 years ago, we started tracking the language and see exactly how many words were in the major English dictionaries. And that's the OED, the unabridged Merriam-Webster's, Macquarie's, etc. We came out with a base number of about 650,000. Then what we did is we did some study of historical linguistics, see what the rate of word creation was for English over the last 400 years. And then what we did is we went out and tested it. We have a proprietary algorithm, and we started filtering out new words. And we came up with an idea that it was going to be sometime in the last couple of years. And then we refined it. We had to tune the algorithm a few times because it's driven by events. If there's a tsunami, words are created. If there's a global financial meltdown, words are created.
Give us an illustration of the sort of words that are joining the language.
We have alka-pops from Australia, recessionista. We have chungan from China. We have a couple things from India. Actually, we have three different words from India. One would be jai ho, the Hindu phrase, and things of that nature.
Benjamin Zimmer, are you convinced?
I'm sorry to say I'm not convinced in the least. I hate to rain on Mr. Payak's parade.
That's right, rain away.
This claim that English is adding its millionth word, this claim that he's been touting for 3 years running now, is really nonsensical. We like to think of everything as quantifiable, but there is simply no way to quantify the English lexicon with anything like the precision that Mr. Payak is claiming.
Well, to be fair to him, he says it's an estimate. He recognizes, by the sound of the way he's just described the process, that it's not an exact science. Is it not of some value, the exercise?
I don't really see the value in it. First of all, he seems to want to have it both ways by making it an estimate and also to give this absurdly precise date and time when the million-word threshold will be crossed. But the whole idea of the lexicon being uncountable is really not a new observation. We could go back to the great James Murray in his introduction to the first volume of the Oxford English Dictionary in 1888. Murray said, "The circle of the English language has a well-defined center but no discernible circumference. So you have a nucleus of English, as Marie explained it, with common words, but you could extend in all directions into slang, regionalisms, technical and scientific jargon, foreign words that haven't been fully assimilated, and you could continue looking for words in any of these directions and not find any definite end in sight. So if you wanted to count, depending on your criteria, you could get to any number you want. It could be a million, million and a half, 2 million.
Well, all right.
No number would have any validity, you know, greater validity than any other number.
Let's put that to Paul Peck, because there's quite a lot there, Paul Peck. A, you're having it both ways. You're being precise and giving an estimate at the same time. And B, it's a pointless exercise anyway, because you can just take it as far as you want.
Well, coming from technology, we were used to hearing why things can't be done, and then we figure out how to do them anyway. And that's what we're doing. We defined it pretty rigidly. And the whole purpose of the Million Word March was to celebrate English coming of age as a global language. There's 1.53 billion people speaking English right now as a first, second, or business language. Just to put that in comparison, in 1960, there were 250 million people speaking English, and most of those were in the former colonies and the Commonwealth. When Ben talks, he's right. You could go up to 20 million words if you wanted to. We don't count the name numerals. We don't count jargon unless it crosses international boundaries and different boundaries. Like, you know, so let's say multitasking. 20 years ago in the industry, that was a very precise technical term. Now everybody uses multitasking. So it can't just be a regionalism. It can't just be a word that is known only with jargon. And so it has to have the depth and breadth before we look at it.
Benjamin Zimmer, are you impressed by any of that?
Again, I'm not. And the problem is, even if you were to rigidly define what counts as a word, even given that, which I think is an intractable problem right there, the counting is not something that a computer algorithm, this proprietary algorithm that Mr. Payak talks about, can actually help you to identify, say, all the words on the internet, which he seems to be claiming that he can do.
Paul Payak and Benjamin Zimmer, thank you.
Now, it wasn't just on the BBC that this millionth word thing got, well, trashed. Blogs and newspapers really laid in. It didn't help that the millionth word was declared to be Web 2.0. It seemed to be somewhat handpicked as, you know, representative of our time. The only people who seemed to like the story and the declaration were the headline writers, online, in newspapers. Again and again, I saw headlines like, English gets its millionth word. That includes the BBC online, by the way. You didn't get the real story until you read past the headline. Two responses in particular are worth noting before we move on. One from someone who commented on the London Times website, his name, Grumpy Steve from Bristol. What he wrote was simple, but it seemed to encompass much of the criticism. Here it is. How can Web 2.0 be a word? It's two words. It's just a piece of silly publicity for the Global Language Monitor. And to say the millionth word makes English the first global language is also silly. If English only has 999,999 words, then it's not global? If you're listening, Steve, keep it grumpy. I've saved the best till last. David Crystal is probably the best-known linguist in Britain. He's the author of several fantastic books about the English language. He was asked by the BBC's Jeremy Paxman what he thought about the millionth word declaration.
Absolute. The biggest load of chicken droppings I've heard in a long time, Jeremy, I have to say.
Can I just play that one more time?
Absolute. The biggest load of chicken droppings I've heard in a long time, Jeremy, I have to say.
That is solid audio gold. Okay, I'm going to sort of move on here now, although we are going to stick with David Crystal and get his sense of how English is globalizing. Here he is later in the same BBC interview.
What's happening in many parts of the world is that two levels of English are being used. Go to Singapore, for instance, and you'll hear standard English spoken. But you'll also hear on the streets of Singapore a local variety of English, Singlish. So people are becoming more multi-dialectal in their own language, if you like. Standard English is the glue that binds all these varieties together. But at a local level, expressions of identity come with local dialects.
We're going to spend some time now on Singlish. I went to Singapore some time back. I did a story for the big show on Singlish, why it's so popular and why that worries the Singaporean government. I should say this too. Since this story aired, I've been informed by a couple of linguists, in other words, by a couple of people who know what they're talking about, that my claim that Singlish is a Creole, you'll hear me say that, is, to quote our previous linguist friend, the biggest load of chicken droppings they'd heard in a long time. So, with that proviso, here is the story. Okay, first, let's hear some Singlish. I recorded this conversation at a mall in Singapore's Chinatown. There was a brand new car at the mall's entrance with salesmen hovering around potential buyers.
Hey, this car how much?
50K, sir. Best price for you, sir.
Hey, got other color, no?
What color? You blue. Want what color? I give you what color.
Oh, blue or no?
Blue, have. If you can buy the car today, I bring the sun down for you.
Really, tomorrow?
Got about 50% of that? Time to turn to the so-called grandmother of Singlish, Sylvia To Peck Chu.
It's English and then literal translation of words and phrases from Hokkien, Chinese dialect, and Malay.
And that's almost a mirror image of Singapore's history. Ethnic Malays, Hokkien-speaking Chinese migrants, British colonizers. There are even a few words of Tamil. That's the language of most Indians living here. Singlish, though, is not among Singapore's four official languages. The most prominent of those is English, the language of instruction, which is spoken by pretty much everyone under 50.
We do speak proper English. It's just that between ourselves, like, we can meet and right away greet each other in Singlish because it's the handshake, it's the group hug, the equivalent of your bro, you know, how you're doing. Or actually, I've never understood that phrase, how you're doing.
Over the years, Singlish has developed from pidgin status, as the linguists say, to a creole, something that has a stable grammar. The grammar is largely Chinese, the vocabulary largely English, which may account for why it sounds amusing, not just to native English speakers, but to Singaporeans as well. They play with words and phrases in a way they never do when they speak English. On Singaporean TV, Singlish is everywhere.
Rosie, look at you, huh? Even your arms you cover up. More ama than ama.
Ama, by the way, is Hokkien for grandma. So more ama than ama means something like even frumpier than grandma. This sitcom was wildly popular in Singapore, so much so that the Prime Minister suggested that the show's main character should go to a Speak Better English class. It was Singapore's very own Dan Quayle Murphy Brown moment. Louis Tuck Yew is the Minister of State for Education and the man charged with ensuring that Singaporeans speak good English. In his view, Singlish is a sort of shorthand that can sound rude to foreigners. Here's an example.
You could ask me to hang up your coat for you, and my reply could be, if I'm too busy, I'm sorry, I'm busy, could you do it yourself? In Singlish, the reply could be very abrupt, go hang yourself.
Not good in a country that depends so much on foreign business people and their investments.
And imagine if you were to use that in your restaurants, in your top hotels, or worse still, on board a Singapore Airlines flight, and your stewardesses are telling the passengers, go hang yourself. I think that could be quite detrimental to what it is that we want to do.
And what Singapore's strong-willed government wants to do, it usually gets to do. This is one of those rare cases when the government has lost control. People want to speak Singlish, and so they do. All that Minister of State Louis can say is it's not easy for everyone to switch between Singlish and English.
The elite can switch quite effectively, and they are able to use the right texture of English in the appropriate setting. I can't say that for the majority of Singaporeans, and therein lies the concern.
Therein indeed lies the concern, according to Singlish lovers. They say that expressions like therein lies the concern just aren't Singaporean. And that's at the heart of this linguistic dispute, what it is to be Singaporean. The country has existed for only 42 years, not much time to forge a national identity. Most of the culture is, like the people, a combination of imported cultures. Singlish is a combination too, but its components have fused into something new. Colin Goh, a movie director, says Singlish is in fact the only thing that's uniquely Singaporean. That's why people want to see it used on TV, he says, if not on every show.
It's not as if we're asking that the news be read in Singlish or that we narrate documentaries in it. We just think they should leave it alone in works of fiction so we can have authentic dialogue.
Goh's recent hit movie, Singapore Dreaming, had dialogue in English, Mandarin and Hokkien, but most of it was in Singlish.
Not now. My boss wants me to go back to office.
Huh? How can I do that?
What to do? Singapore is like that. Everywhere is like that. My opinion. If I don't do, then I also cannot sell insurance. Then we all how?
Singaporeans' embrace of this staccato patois doesn't just irritate the government. Remember Sylvia To Peck Chu, the grandmother of Singlish. Even she, who has done so much to promote Singlish, says TV shows in particular overuse it.
I find that when you listen to it for a great deal of time, it starts not to make sense. It's very annoying to listen to a drama or a comedy where all the characters speak. The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. What? Now is the time for all good men to come to the party. Huh? You can't listen to this, all 23 minutes of an episode like this. I know I can't.
But ultimately, To loves Singlish. Within seconds of complaining of its overuse, she comes up with another Singlishism, SARS time. It means during the SARS crisis in Singapore.
You remember SARS time? How we all used to pull our T-shirt up in front of our nose when we take the train? Because frightened catch germs, ma. When I hear stuff like I have to jot it down because it really is lyrical and not broken English, which I keep repeating.
Not broken English, nor a language in its own right. Just a homegrown hodgepodge that gives its users a sense of belonging. For The World, I'm Patrick Cox, Singapore. So after I reported that story, I really got the Singlish bug. I followed Singlishisms online, and there are plenty of places to find them. The best site that I found is run by that movie director I interviewed in the piece, Colin Goh, and his wife, Yen-Yen Wu. They've also edited something called the Coxford Singlish Dictionary. The revised and updated second edition has just come out. Clearly, I had to go and spend some time with Colin and Yen-Yen. So I went to visit them in New York City. That's where they live these days. In fact, they live on the edge of the East Coast's largest Chinatown, Flushing in Queens. A couple of things I should mention before I replay our conversation. Singapore doesn't just have a Speak Good English campaign. It also has a Speak Mandarin campaign, just like the Chinese government does, trying to get everybody not to speak all of those Chinese dialects, just the Mandarin dialect. So all of the Hokkien dialect speakers in Singapore, they're being encouraged to switch to Mandarin, or at least to make sure that their kids do. Also, you'll hear mention of tags in the context of sentences. These are sentence suffixes that the Singaporeans love to use, as you have just heard. So it's utterances like la, ho, me, that kind of thing. So when you hear Yen-Yen or Colin say tags, that's what they're talking about. And one last thing, let's get it in right now. This week's Eating Sideways is Shanghai, PK, Beijing. All will be revealed. Here goes.
We have well over 100 new phrases and terms that we've added. We have also tried to have more pronunciation guides, translations into standard English. We have also included a test paper, an exam in Singlish.
Because yeah, so in Singapore, like every student, when they're 12, they have to take the primary school leaving examination. So we have the PSLE, which is the Powerful Singlish Language Examination. So we have that in the book as well.
Have you taken the examination yourselves?
Yes, we have.
Did you pass?
We scored very well.
Passed with flying colours.
Okay, so in order to do well in this exam, what kind of questions are you asking?
Okay, for example, we have a grammar close passage, like you must be able to choose the correct tag from the list of words. So, for example, Singlish tags are ho, la, le, liao. Men, meh. So you need to be able to choose when to use those phrases.
It's always... Singaporeans always can tell how Singaporean you are by whether or not you can use the la properly. It's often thought by foreigners that, you know, if you just add la to the end of any sentence or question, then it's Singaporean. But that's not true. There are only specific instances in which you use the la. And so, you know, a true test of a Singaporean would be whether you use the la correctly at the right time and whether you can use the proper substitute.
So in this test, have you got situations where you would and where you would not use the la?
Yes. We'll fill it in and we'll read it out to you,
Yeah. And you're filling in with correct answers each time.
Yes, yeah. That's right. So, this entire passage would feature many of the Singlish tags, and you'll be able to tell when the use of a specific tag would be appropriate. So it begins, yesterday, huh, Auntie Neo went to the market. She went to buy fish, prawn, and apple, lah. And then, huh, she asked the fish uncle, excuse me, uncle, today the redfish how much? But the uncle, huh, he say, the redfish you can afford, meh? I think so, you better buy the ikan bilis. So, of course, Auntie know them tulan lah. For no reason, the child fish uncle see her no up. She also don't know why. Eh, don't see Auntie know so small, okay? She damn fierce one, eh? Sure won't let the fish uncle bully kitty one. Fish uncle got big knife, she also not scared. So, Auntie know use her bag lah. Inside got a lot of apple, the big type one, leh. She swing in the air and then hunt down the fish uncle until he gong gong liao. But then, sui sui got one mata saw her. He immediately come over and take her bag of apple and throw it on the ground. Whoa, all the apple inside become apple juice liao. Damn sayang, man. The moral of the story is, if you want a pia zui, then you must buy cheaper type apple lah. Don't say I never tell you, huh? Here endeth the lesson.
Okay. I think I probably got about 30% of that without looking at it.
Okay.
I began to lose the thread around about the second sentence.
How is that 30%?
Well, every sentence I think I got about 30% of, okay. Which was not enough to understand it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe you can just explain.
Here's the English translation. Yesterday, Auntie Neo went to the market.
In Singlish, you would say yesterday, ho, because when you're telling a story and you're talking to somebody, ho is kind of trying to get agreement from the other person. It's kind of, do you know what I'm saying? Kind of thing. So you would say, yesterday, ho, you know, Auntie Neo went to the market. She went to buy fish, prawn, and apple, la. So at this point, you would only use la and not ho or anything else.
Why?
It's used like a full stop, but it can be used to add a certain casualness to the expression. Oh, you know, it was just like that, lah. Or sometimes it's used as an expression of exasperation.
It reminds me a little bit of the British term in it, popularized by Ali G.
That's true. And then it proceeds. So the story is about Auntie Neo going to the market, and she wants to buy fish, prawns, and apples. But the fishmonger, and everybody in Singapore who's older than you is referred to as uncle, and likewise women are referred to as auntie. So the fish uncle told, you know, she asked the fish uncle, excuse me uncle, how much is the red fish today? And the uncle replies, you know, can you afford the red fish? I think you better buy the anchovies.
She gets angry because the fishmonger see her no up, and that means to despise
to
her,
down.
To look down on her. So see her no up.
It's the little transliteration of can't booty, see no up.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
Yes. She damn fierce one leh. So she damn fierce one leh means that she is very fierce. We use fierce not just in the terms of angry or aggressive, but sometimes to be
powerful.
So leh, when used leh, it tends to be, it's emphasis. It's a little more than la, and it tends to be mostly used by women, actually.
Really?
It's a little bit girly. Leh.
Really?
Yeah. She's that fierce one. Sure won't let the fish uncle bully kichi one. Okay, bully kichi is a classic Singlish term, to bully, and kichi means small in Malay. So, you know, to bully a small person. You know, Auntie Neo would not let the fishmonger bully her just because she's small. Now, fish uncle got big knife, she also not scared. So even though the fish uncle has a big knife, she is not scared. So Auntie Neo use her bag lah. Inside got a lot of apple, the big, big type one. Again, the use of big, big, which just means big. But it's, again, it's borrowed from Chinese, where you tend to repeat things. Ta ta, or tua tua, as we say in Hokkien. You know, she swing in the air and then hunt down the fish uncle until he gong gong liao. So she swung her bag in the air and hit the fishmonger until he got dizzy. Gong gong is... I'm tempted to say it's onomatopoeia, except I don't believe there's a sound that goes with being woozy. But basically hit him in the head until it was like a gong.
Gong.
And you fell over.
Yeah, and liao is a fairly new tag, actually. It means you use it when you finish something, to indicate something. He got hit in the head until he's in pain. So it's like, it means it's been done, like it's finished, liao.
Something is completed.
Completed.
Or done.
Yeah. A very common expression is when they text message each other in Singapore. So you have an appointment and you're meeting someone and a person says, I am here, liao. I'm here already.
It's new because it's borrowed mainly from Mandarin.
Yeah.
Liao in Mandarin also means, comes from the Mandarin le, or liao, and means it's done, I'm here already.
So a lot of the new Singlish is borrowed, it's borrowed from a Chinese dialect, it'll be from Mandarin rather than Hokkien.
The new stuff is from...
There are more and more Mandarin
terms
creeping into Singlish. It has a lot to do with, well, there's a lot of Chinese immigration from mainland China now more than ever before. Also... Chinese pop culture is becoming more ubiquitous and definitely slicker. So it's getting into Singaporean popular culture a lot more.
In Singapore, with the younger generation, there's just fewer Hokkien speakers now because of the Speak Mandarin campaign and all that.
I think, like all languages, Singlish is changing, and it will change continually with more immigration. We are borrowing more terms from everywhere. You know, it's coming from online, you're meeting new communities. So it's really fun. We've had a lot of fun trying to document this.
Yeah.
Obviously, we come from a different generation. The Singlish is, from our generation is slowly
changing,
evolving. Yeah, yeah. It's a joke in Singapore that if you really want to hear the authentic Singlish or the authentic Singaporeans from, say, the 1960s, you'd have to go to Perth in Australia, because that's where a lot of Singaporeans retire to or emigrate to. And, you know, in 10 years from now, Singaporeans would sound completely different.
Just like any other language.
Just like any other language, yeah. Yeah.
Do you hear sort of localized versions of these mixed languages taking place around you here in Flushing?
Well, in some ways, I find that Flushing is more Chinese than
Singapore.
We definitely hear more Beijing slang, for example, which also borrows some English terms. One of the terms that are in vogue is PK. For example, Shanghai PK Beijing, which is better. It's the equivalent of versus, I would guess, but PK actually stands for penalty kick. So, for example, they say Shanghai PK Beijing, it's in a shootout, in a penalty shootout, who would win? And that's great, and it's sort of uniquely Chinese. We haven't heard that in Singapore, but we do hear that here.
Yeah. And also, like, when I go to the supermarket and I ask the fishmonger, like, what's this fish? And then he was like, oh, I usually speak in Cantonese to them, and I say, meh yu, meh yu. Then he's like, oh, si bei, si bei. Then I was like, meh si, meh bei. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the Chinese characters are for si bei. And then, like, after a long time, I realized that it's actually si bass. So
he's not been speaking
Chinese. I thought it's Chinese.
And when we went to get the car inspected recently, we're trying to explain to the Chinese mechanic that we wanted our tires rotated, but we had no idea
how to say that in Chinese. So I was like, oh, 我要换 车轮 or something. And then he's like, oh, rotate tire, like you rotate tire. So I'm like, rotate tire. And yeah, so it's rotate tires. So you want to rotate your tires. So it's pretty funny.
Yan Yan Wu, who, along with her husband Colin Goh, edits the Coxford Singlish Dictionary. A new revised edition is just out. I'll post links on the World in Words Facebook page and at patrickcox.wordpress.com. Our last item is a short one. You may have heard some news concerning Uyghurs this past week. The Uyghur people are a Turkic ethnic group who live in Asia, mainly in China, and many Uyghurs do not like their homeland being run by Beijing. There are outlawed separatist groups, occasional acts of violence, which the Chinese government called terrorism, the whole bit. So what made news this week was that four Uyghur nationalists who had wound up at Guantanamo were released. They'd been picked up in Afghanistan and Pakistan in the months after 9/11, and they'd been handed over to the United States. Well, nearly 8 years later, the Obama administration has decided that these guys pose no threat to the United States. So they wanted to release them, but they didn't want to hand them back to China either. So four of them have been sent to Bermuda, where they're about to be or have been granted work visas. They may even get citizenship one day. 13 more may end up in Palau in the South Pacific. Bermuda, Palau, a long way from home, pretty much guaranteed not to have any native or non-native speakers of the Uyghur language. And if you're wondering about that language, here is Alim Saitov. He's with the Uyghur American Association, which is based in Washington. Here he is.
Yes, Uyghur language is one of the very beautiful Turkic languages. And it's very smooth, easy to speak, but it's very hard to learn. But Uyghurs in our histories, you know, we have produced, you know, a lot of wonderful books which have strong influence in the Turkish world, like the Kutatku Bilik, you know, the wisdom of, you know, for the ruling class. It was a book sort of written for the Karahani king so that he can rule the country justly by Yusuf Pasajib. And also another book written by Mahmud Kashgari, we call Mahmud of Kashgar. And he wrote the book about a dictionary for all the Turkish languages written in the 10th, 11th centuries. That's considered the encyclopedia of languages for all the Turkish groups. So the Uyghurs have played such tremendous influence in the entire Turkish history. And the Uyghur language also played such a tremendous role throughout the Turkish history. We have a proverb, I would say, that really express what kind of people Uyghurs are. You know? Why there are few Uyghurs in other countries, especially in the Western countries. Why Uyghurs always lived and loved their homeland so much instead of fleeing into other countries. Other peoples like the Chinese people, you see them, they are everywhere in all parts of the world. They basically live. And the Uyghurs are not like that. They did travel to other countries, but they did not flee their countries and immigrate to other countries, live in those countries until the Chinese communists came. So we have a proverb which really expresses the heart of the Uyghur people, which says, Başkalarının yurtu sultan bulgaça öz yurtunda ultan bul. That basically means it's better to become a beggar to live in our own country than to become a sultan in somebody else's country. Yeah, there is nothing wrong with other people's country, of course. It's just the Uyghur people love our country so much. They are so patriotic, and they want to live there.
But for the Guantanamo Uyghurs, that's not going to be possible. They're going to have to make do in Bermuda and Palau and elsewhere. Alim Saitoff is vice president of the Uyghur American Association, and he brings us to a close today. Send me your comments and suggestions via email or Facebook. The email address is language@pri.org. I'm also on Twitter. My handle is Patrick Cox. That's P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. And see you next week.